Okay, good evening and welcome, very warm welcome to all to the Peace Alliance Monthly Action Call for the month of May 2020. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and I very much appreciate having you all with us tonight. Thank you for making time to join us. I'm going to go over the agenda for the call. I want to mention that everyone who was registered for the call at least an hour ago should have received in your inbox an email message from me with links to two action sheets. So if you have the opportunity sometime during the next 25 minutes, I'll encourage you to access that email and click on those links if you can do that while staying on the call so that you can look at those action sheets with us in about 25 minutes. We have two action sheets because we want to focus one set of actions around our guests here and Uncommon Law and some of their priorities, which they share with us, as well as the kickoff of our Mother's Day action campaign, which is actually going to extend through the summer this year. So in a moment, I'll introduce our guests and we'll hear from them, and then we'll have a chance for question and answer discussion with any of you who'd like to get involved. Then we're going to have a little bit of coaching, looking at the action that we would like you to take in connection with Uncommon Law. Then we're going to hear from Nancy Merritt, who is our representative from the Department of Peacebuilding Campaign Committee, getting an update, and then we'll talk about our second action, which has to do with the Department of Peacebuilding Campaign and the Mother's Day Campaign. Then we will have a chance to hear shares from the field. That's all of you, anybody who wants to share about what's going on in your peacebuilding world, in your work, events, announcements, challenges, successes. Have some space just to hear whatever's going on. And that can also be a space for further questions. If you have questions for me or Nancy, at that point, our special guests may or may not still be with us. They're welcome to stay for the whole call, but we also understand they might leave after the first 35 minutes or so. So that is the plan. And let me tell you a little bit about the organization that we're partnering with on this call. Sorry, find my cursor. Where are you? Thank you. I was very excited to learn about Uncommon Law. And I found reading their mission to be kind of dreamy, and not in the sense that I think it's out of reach dreamy, but on the contrary, I think it's beautifully aligned with my own hopes, and I think likely aligned with many of yours. And it resonated with my sense of the world so many of us in the Peace Alliance Network have been working to create, and also applying methods that so many of us I know will find somewhat familiar and also find profound common cause with. So I'm going to read the entire mission more or less. Uncommon Law's mission is to provide access to justice and healing for people impacted by incarceration. We deliver trauma-informed, healing-centered mental health and legal counseling to help provide a safe pathway home for people currently serving lengthy prison terms in California prisons. We represent people in their parole hearings and habeas petitions, and we engage in litigation and policy advocacy to address systemic discrimination in the criminal justice system. We also provide training for people in prison, attorneys, family members, and law students in order to improve the overall quality of preparation for and representation in parole hearings. Our clients cannot be released from prison unless and until they have participated in counseling and other training programs and can show the California Parole Board they can safely rejoin their communities. We help them get ready to make that showing. That's what Uncommon Law is about. And we are very fortunate to have three guests with us from Uncommon Law. They are Julie Hess, James or JC Cabot, and Ritika Agarwal. I'm going to give you all three of their bios, and then I'm going to let them share their time as they deem fit. I think it's going to be possibly Julie, then JC, then Ritika, but I'm not sure if that's what they've decided. So Julie Hess received her bachelor's degree in African Studies from Vassar College and her master's of social work from New York University, joined Uncommon Law in 2016 as a volunteer social worker and served as their deputy director from 2018 to 2020. Before transitioning into her current role as Director of Clinical Support. James, or J.C. Cavett, is currently a graduate student at California State University in Long Beach, pursuing his master's degree in social work. He's working at California State University Fullerton as the Project Rebound Housing and Outreach Coordinator. After serving over two decades in prison, JC is redefining the narrative about incarcerated individuals. He works with various organizations that focus on transformation, restorative justice, and trauma healing, and he provides mentorship, advocacy, and emotional support for those directly impacted by incarceration and trauma, both pre and post. And finally, Ritika Agarwal earned her BA in Feminist Studies and Psychology from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and for the past 15 years has been a legal advocate and community organizer with people incarcerated in California prisons. She's currently pursuing a Master's of Science degree in counseling at SF State University and providing therapeutic counseling to clients at San Quentin State Prison. So you can see why I'm so thrilled, and I imagine many of you are as well, that the three of them are here with us tonight, and I look forward to hearing what they have to say. Thank you so much for joining us. Can I let you unmute yourself, Julie? Perfect.
Thank you. Thanks, Dan, for that great introduction, and thank you, Peace Alliance, and Matthew, shout out, for connecting us. I'll just do a brief overview of specifically the counseling aspect of Uncommon Law, since I think that's what we're here to talk about today, and then I'll pass it to JC and Ritika. In California, the parole board is looking for, and then we're talking about people who are convicted of crimes and sentenced to often life with the possibility of parole, we focus on that possibility. And in order to get through the parole board, one has to appear before a panel of commissioners, two commissioners, and demonstrate insight, remorse, and accountability for their life and their crimes and their life leading up to their crimes, a deep understanding of who they were before they committed their crimes, who they've become since. And a lot of this is rooted in histories of childhood trauma and systemic trauma and systemic racism and all of the societal influences that we as a culture don't really seem to know how to deal with when they're happening, especially to young people. But as soon as that young person goes from becoming a survivor or a victim into a perpetrator, we seem to have this ability to very quickly decide that we know what to do with them, which is to separate them, lock them up, and throw around this word rehabilitation and expect someone to be able to spend their time in prison rehabilitating themselves without a lot of guidance, without any attention to the actual root causes of what brought them there. And so Uncommon Law is a legal nonprofit, but it is uncommon in that the focus is really on this journey that a person needs to be able to take in order to heal, to heal from those traumas and to really develop the kind of insight that the board is looking for. We believe at Uncommon Law that this board process is but a step on the way to life success. We're not necessarily focused on getting people through the process, though along the way of our counseling and support, people are typically found, well, I shouldn't say typically, but we have a pretty good record of supporting people in walking the pathway toward parole success, but more importantly, toward life success. And so we have attorneys who partner with people who are planning to appear before the parole board, and we have counselors on our team, and you'll meet at least one of them today, and I see at least one other is on the call today. And those counselors do a few things. One, they work with the legal teams in order to shore up their understanding of trauma and their ability to address some of the clinical issues, and they also partner directly with people inside, again, to walk them on along with them on the pathway toward healing. And, you know, Uncommon Law does a lot of other advocacy in terms of trying to build in healing elements to the entire system. We believe that when people are first made aware to the systems, either the juvenile justice system or maybe at the point of their first arrest, that there should be an assessment for trauma, because people aren't born ready to commit crime. Something usually has to have happened in a person's life in order to set them on a certain path. and the meaning that they make of those events typically guides them toward the kinds of things that we like to arrest and lock people up for. JC is one of the first people I met inside prison, actually, and I'll let him tell more about his story. But I've had the pleasure of working with him to provide workshops inside, because we're actually also developing a program where we'll be able to basically engage people in a therapeutic process in a group setting, so that multiple people inside can connect along their path of healing in community, so that the vulnerability and the openness that is required in the board can be not necessarily practiced, but really embraced by the communities where they're living, unfortunately, inside prison. So JC and I are also developing that program, and along the way we've been running workshops inside. And Ritika, as mentioned, is an intern with Uncommon Law, and has been providing direct services to people inside all year. So I'll let her talk more about that. I think I will hand it to James Cavett now.
Thank you, Ms. Julie. Daniel, thank you so much again for just inviting us to this platform and just sharing a little bit about what we do in the population that I personally care so much about. Just a little bit of backdrop story on myself. I am a former client of Uncommon Law. I served 23 years of confinement, and I've now just actually last month have now been home for 3 years, since graduated, now enrolled in, like you mentioned earlier, my grad program. And I still do a lot of advocacy work and direct service to men and women who are still currently behind bars, both at the state level with state prisons and at the county jail level here in my community where I am. When I first came to Uncommon Law, I was on my journey of redemption and to rebrand myself. And really, my thing was, when I was sitting in that cage, I wanted to understand, why was I there? It wasn't the fact that I had committed harm against someone, because it was more than that for me. And I had to start taking these groups to start digging into, like, why am I really sitting in prison right now? And why did it take for this to happen for me to get in touch with myself and who I am? So I met Keith Watley, who was actually my attorney who represented me when I went before the Board of Prison Hearings in California. And I had done a lot of work before Keith had come into my life, but there were still some things that were, I had some rough edges that I needed to work out before going in front of this parole board panel and hopefully regaining my liberation and freedom. I'm so happy to say that everything worked out. I was able to be found suitable my very first hearing. I've been home, like I said earlier, 3 years now, and haven't looked back once, because I came out focused and determined and knowing that I represent so many people, and I do a lot of speaking. And one of the things that I always make mention of is that I am not a unicorn. I am not unique. A lot of people will look at me and say, you're special and you're not like the rest. And my response to that is, I am very dull in comparison to some of my brothers that I left behind. And if people think that I'm something special, they should wait till they meet some of these men that I left behind the wall. So that's a little backdrop. Currently I am involved a lot with my job at California State University Fullerton as the housing coordinator with Project Rebound, which is an organization that helped formerly incarcerated men and women matriculate into institutions of higher ed. One of the things that I used as my transformative practice while I was inside was education, the self-help groups, and my spirituality to help ground me and set me on the path and the course that I'm on today. And so I still endorse education every chance I get. Schools, not prisons. Now it's really about figuring out ways of, how do we go back inside? How do I go back inside with having over 15 years of experience of working with trauma, especially with men on the inside. How do we help them, especially now with this pandemic? And we all are probably very well aware of the fact that many of our prisons, at least here in California, they're starting to become death traps because of this pandemic. And one of the things the institutions here has done is they shut down programming. And mental health access already came with its challenges for folks to utilize that for their well-being. But a lot of the inmate-ran self-help groups, they're shut down. And for me personally, I think that's where a lot of the trauma healing happens, is in those self-help groups that aren't deemed as mental health services within the criminal justice system currently. And right now, and I was talking to someone last night who just recently walked out of San Quentin a couple of days ago, and I asked him, what was the morale of the population before you left? And he said, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear inside because the men inside of prison, they're not able to practice social distancing. The way that the system was designed, it wasn't designed to create space. It was designed to stack people right on top of one another. And right now, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, at least in San Quentin State Prison, and as well as in Lancaster State Prison here in California, because people are really being impacted by this pandemic. And even the family ties, they're not allowed to have visits, phone calls are limited, access to movement is limited. And so it's really affecting people that I care about that are still behind the walls, which just motivates me to do all that I can to bring attention, awareness to the fact that more needs to be done to address not only just overcrowding in prisons throughout the nation, but especially when we have something to this degree where it's taken lives, we as a society, we should pay close attention to what's going on with our criminal justice system. So I'll leave it at that for now and pass it on to Ms. Ritika.
Thanks, JC. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for having me on the call today. So my name is Ritika. I identify as an abolitionist and a feminist, and I've been doing legal advocacy with people inside for almost 15 years. That's looked a couple different ways. In the past, I was a community organizer with Critical Resistance. I was a paralegal in a prison overcrowding case. And then I worked for 5 years at Uncommon Law as a paralegal and office manager. I started graduate school last fall and have been really grateful and honored to return to Uncommon Law and to get to work closely with 3 incarcerated men at San Quentin. In thinking about this question about counseling in the age of COVID, I just think about how challenging it's been and how there aren't really any models on how to do this in a global pandemic. We were challenged with a really abrupt ending to our counseling sessions about 2 months ago. As JC mentioned, shortly after that, all legal visits and family visits and programs stopped, which means that people who are incarcerated aren't getting in-person support of their lawyers, their outside therapists, and their loved ones. The prison, San Quentin State Prison specifically, has a policy that says that no confidential legal phone calls are allowed unless someone is scheduled for a parole hearing. At Uncommon Law, we work with people far in advance of their parole hearing in a therapeutic and in a legal setting to ensure that they're ready. So the clients that I'm working with aren't yet scheduled for a parole hearing. That will happen later this year. That all is to say that I'm not able to communicate with them by phone. So some of the ways that people are communicating with their therapists on the outside by video conferencing or by phone are not available to us in working with our clients inside. So that means that we're left with confidential legal mail, which we're extremely grateful for, but it has its limitations. So much of counseling and therapy in general is about offering your own nervous system as a way to co-regulate with your clients and to be attuned to their feelings and the things that arise when discussing specific topics or emotions or events. Since I can't physically see them or hear their voices, we can't really work in that nuanced way and offer co-regulation. With male and male, especially going in and out of prisons, there's a time delay. So even if they write me a letter, it might not be until a week or longer for me to get that letter. So that just means that the emotions that they're writing about in their letters may no longer be relevant by the time I respond. So given those challenging set of circumstances, we're trying to be creative and think about ways to kind of bridge this gap and work towards our treatment goals and work towards freedom. So some of that has meant that we're finding self-help books to work through with our clients on particular issues that are of interest. Other clients have kind of intuitively turned to art therapy as a way to express complex emotions. Some of my work in this process has been to remind clients of their resiliency and the strengths that they have used to get them through other really unique and trying times in their life. I know a lot of us have been talking about advocacy, and another important part of that is just making sure that our clients are physically safe, that they're able to get access to reliable scientific information, not just the news, and that they have access to masks and cleaning supplies, and that the people coming in and out of the prisons are safe and healthy. Initially, you know, when I last met with my clients the day before the shutdown, they were taking this in stride and making a lot of jokes about how they know how to handle a lockdown and it's all of us on the outside that are having a hard time and buying up all the toilet paper and going crazy. But now that I think we're a few months in, I think, like JC mentioned, that there is a real fear that's coming up. And as people are starting to die in the prisons in California, everything is sort of ramping up. And without having access to the tools and the resources from their communities on the outside, it's more challenging for our clients to cope. So I think that it's going to take all of the tools that we have to build up a new world that we want to live in, a new world where it could be more equitable and just, and allowing us to find ways to address harm that's restorative for ourselves and for our communities. And I know not a lot of us are getting a chance to take a breath and step back. It feels like for some of us, it's gotten so much busier since this pandemic. But I just want to ask for all of us to give ourselves some room to dream up the world that we want to see. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, all three of you. I found that very rich so far, and this is probably a good time as any to remind folks this call is being recorded and it'll be available on our website, and we're happy to share the recording with Uncommon Law. If you want to post it some various places and share it. So various questions come to my mind, but I'm not going to act like a too privileged a facilitator. I'll encourage folks in the field who have questions. You can electronically raise a hand. If you have the app on your computer or phone, you can press the hand raising button from your menu. If you're on the telephone, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And if you're having a hard time locating the button to indicate hand raising, you can just physically raise your hand if I can see you, and I'd be happy to call on you. Don't see any hands raised yet. I may jump in with one of my questions if I don't see one in a moment. Oh, I see one. Okay. Faith Fuller, go ahead. Can you unmute yourself? Or do you want
me to? Oh, hey. Thanks so much. That was really moving, all three of you. And I'm familiar with your organization and have always been so impressed with it. My question is, you were talking about mental health support. Is there any, other than the outside groups coming in, what do the prisoners have in terms of any mental health supports? And I guess I'm saying generally, but also it seems in this time that we need, whether we're inside or outside, a lot of more emotional support than we're getting.
JC, do you want to answer that since you just wrote your research paper about it?
Sure. Unfortunately, from the information that I gather and from just speaking with some of my friends that are still there, there is not a lot of options for mental health support currently. And I think CDCR here in California, they're trying to figure out, as most of us are, like, how do we deal with this pandemic? You know, what is the new normal going to look like? I think it's the same is true even for them in the Department of Corrections. Usually a lot of the mental health services, so I'm gonna share a little bit for me. So when I was inside, a lot of men, there's a stigma that comes from utilizing mental health services. And a lot of men didn't use that as their primary option. So they turned to a lot of the self-help inmate-led, volunteer-sponsored programs. And a lot of my own unpacking of childhood trauma, victimization, abuse, it happened not with the therapist with mental health. It happened in these smaller groups with individuals who were kind of in the same boat as me, where a safe container was established and with the skillful help of volunteers kind of helped me navigate through my own trauma. And unfortunately, that is not an option for folks in the prison system right now. And so they're left to kind of deal with this fear, this anxiety, this stress kind of on their own.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I know from my son being inside that accessing mental health was really a stigma. And one of the initiatives that I want to help with, and I'm in Alameda County, I'm in Oakland, is that I'm hearing a lot from African American males, maybe a lot of them who are formerly incarcerated, that is the way that they can get emotional support by maybe talking together in a group. And I think that's a really good model, because accessing the traditional system might not be something that they're willing to do. So anyway, thank you for that. That it sounded like it supported the model that I'm looking to collaborate on with a bunch of nonprofits and try to get funded.
I just want to add one last thing really quick, Faith. I think one of the most important things that we can do as an outside community, and I think it's attached to our action items here, but for those of us who know someone inside, the letter writing support, the outside world being able to reach in and say, hey, we're still here for you. Because that connection between volunteers that come in and out of the prison many times was our connection to the outside world. And now that that has been severed, I think it's vital for folks on the inside to know that people on the outside, we're still here, we still care, we're still fighting. And whether it be through a letter, a note, any way that we can send that, our voice back inside, I think it's vital at this time.
Oh God, thank you for that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Faith. Next I see Susan, my old friend Susan Livingston. Welcome. Can you unmute yourself? You want me to do it? Got it.
Hi, thanks so much for showing up, and thank you so much, Dan, for organizing this topic. I'm living in California at the moment. I'm in Oakland, as a matter of fact. And I have a dear one who's behind bars in Florida in a private prison. And their response to the lockdown was to give their people extra phone time and extra video conference. They have video visits, they call them, video visits. And to give them that just right off the top, I mean, the callers on the outside still have to get approved and all of that, but they get extra time that they don't have to pay for. I don't understand what the rationale could possibly be for limiting contact with the outside. Can any of you speak to that?
I'll tell you what they would tell us on the inside: safety and security. They tag everything safety and security, the possibility of a volunteer getting sick, or a person from our community that's free going in and possibly bringing or carrying this virus inside. Their thing is separation, you know?
Yeah, they definitely discontinued visitation, and that's why they compensated with increasing the telephone allowance and the video conferencing allowance,
which is
because that didn't involve contact at all.
Yeah, and even though that's a step, I feel, in the right direction, it's not enough, because you have a lot of individuals on the inside that their family on the outside may not be able to pay, because a lot of times this is not a free call. I know at San Quentin, Global Tel Link, for the month of, I believe it was March, maybe March beginning into April, they had a month of just free phone calls. But now it's back to their charging their regular cost per call. And so even with the use of extra time, you got to think about the loved one that is free. Do they have the resources to accept that extra time to pay for it, especially if it's at a cost?
Yeah, totally. I don't even subscribe to the telephone or the video visits. I like the email service. It's much more affordable.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something that we should be thinking, keeping in mind, you know, even though they're making a step in the right direction, is it feasible for the majority of inmates or people inside to access and utilize that?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Susan.
Well, thanks for your presentation and for your presence.
Thank you.
So seeing no other hands up, I'll toss you a little grab bag of some questions that came to my mind. See what you want to do with them. Some of this was sort of answered, but JC, when you talked about the process of that you needed to take the rough edges off before, yeah, I'm curious if you could tell us with a little bit of the details of what that looked like. And I don't know if it would refer back to some of what Ritika mentioned. I love the description of offering your own nervous system as a way to co-regulate. Is that something that you experienced, or are there other processes, other healing processes that helped you to get ready to make that step? I'm also curious if this combination of legal and psychotherapeutic counseling, how unique is this? I'm not familiar with other organizations that offer a combination of legal advocacy and therapies, certainly not trauma-informed therapies to this degree. And I'll stop there, because that's probably all we have time for responses to. Okay. Thoughts?
So to your first question, I was still rough around the edges. I had done a lot of work, but I still had some blind spots, some scotomas. And one of the unique things about Keith Whatley as my attorney was he has a way of speaking to the heart of the matter without coming across as real aggressive or threatening. And so he was pointing out some of my areas that I needed to go back and rethink and work on. And some of it was this emotional work. Some of the trauma I wasn't yet ready to give voice to. I didn't have the vocabulary yet to speak about some of the things that he knew would come up when I went in front of the Board of Parole hearings. And so he really encouraged me. He said, we need to look at some of these areas over here and look at them with the lens to where you're gonna be able to to talk about it and say, how does this connect to what you did? You know, and so it was this slow kind of grinding out process. And for me, the difficulty in that was sitting in the emotion, really sitting in something that I had held a lot of shame around, a lot of guilt around, and having to do that kind of in incremental steps with Keith and Uncommon Law. But what truly helped me was my inside community, that community that I feel that my growth and transformation and my self-care really happened in these small circles on the inside. So when Keith would give me an assignment to work on, I would then go back to my community and say, I need your help. I need to process this. And really I needed some support to kind of hold me while these feelings of guilt and shame and remorse, all of this stuff that I didn't want to sit with was coming up for me. And so that took time. To be honest, it was this back and forth, you know, okay, I see you're on the right track, but let's go back and, because I still didn't want to deal with it, you know? And so I kind of chipped away until I was able to sit with the feelings of guilt and shame, but I also was able to have this narrative that I was able to vocalize about and vocalize and connect it to my commitment offense, which was pivotal in me gaining my freedom. So that's the first part of this. And I think the second part of this question, this idea of pairing a legal component with this therapeutic dimension is, so I've been inside for 23 years. It has not been done in California, at least. And I think that's one of the things that we at Uncommon Law are trying to fill that gap now. Because what we're finding is that you have a lot of men that are going through some of these groups inside, and the groups don't necessarily give you the language or the vocabulary that translates over to the Board of Parole hearings. And so you may take all of these groups, you know, for 20 years, you may have a language and a vocabulary that works for this self-help space, but does not necessarily translate over into the Board of prison hearing space. And so we're trying to help bridge the gap. So I don't know, Julie, Ritika, if you wanted to add something onto that.
I think what you said is beautiful and accurate. The only thing I would add is that there are some issues that there aren't self-help groups for. Some issues related to sexual harm and sexual violence are not openly discussed in self-help groups for safety purposes. And that means that there's a gap there. That means that there is some work that folks need. There's some support that we can offer that isn't available inside the prisons. So that's another reason why it's important to offer some outside therapeutic assistance to clients who are working through those issues.
I think we're going to have you all back on for a whole other call. There's plenty more ground to cover. I would love to get into talking about the pathway towards abolition and talking about decarceration and what that might look like and various other questions that came up, but I don't think it's going to happen in this hour. So for now, I'm going to steer folks' attention. I know a couple other folks may have raised their hands, but we may get to it later. So hold your questions if you still have them. And bring your attention to that first action sheet and wonder if there's a volunteer who has it in front of you, the one that says the name of the document is Action Sheet 1. And at the top, it says Peace Alliance Action Sheet, May 12th, 2020. Is anybody willing to read that aloud for us? If you're willing to read it aloud, just go ahead and unmute yourself and
Geraldine, I'll do it.
Thanks, Geraldine. Geraldine is also on our leadership council on legislative advocacy.
Yeah, okay. I have a policy question that I will save for later because they do have a bill that's coming up for a hearing, but I'll save that. Getting to the action sheet, Mother's Day Pie Action and the Uncommon Law Support. May is a big month for both of us at the Peace Alliance and for our allies at Uncommon Law. Here below are two opportunities to promote peace building this month and throughout the summer. Number one, get involved with Uncommon Law's Action Pack Month by getting on their email list at www.uncommonlaw.org. You will then be invited to May 21st to a postcard writing night using an online app. People can go to the site, click a template, write a postcard, and send messages of solidarity and support for lifers with upcoming parole hearings. Ways to share support, love, and kindness. Hoping to reach about 500 people. The May campaign of fundraising and advocacy geared towards getting lifers and violent crime convicted people included in conversations around prison population reform, criminal justice reform. This will include a series of events building momentum and community engagement. Watch for your inbox after you sign up for announcements of shared virtual screenings of powerful and relevant films. Number two, take action with our annual Mother's Day initiative for U.S. Department of Peacebuilding and other strategic policy goals. Please see the other sheet for details of the summer 2020 Peace Pie campaign.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
I have one question in regards to the postcards. But to be able to do this, do you need a printer to be able to print them out and cut them?
I see them shaking their heads. I'm guessing that the app just creates the postcards.
Yeah. So.
The app was actually developed by a man named Marcus Bullock, who, when he was incarcerated at the age of 15 for 8 years in an adult institution, his mother sent him letters every single day and photographs. And they sustained him and a lot of the people who were housed with him. And he got out and looked around and saw all these people sending away from their phones to all their friends. He realized there was this missing opportunity to send those to people inside prison. And so he's actually developed an app. So directly from your phone, you can send a postcard through this app that he has created to someone inside. And the app, I don't know, it goes somewhere, probably somewhere in California. They print them out and they actually mail them into prisons nationwide. And so for this action, you'll be able to, just from your phone, send postcards to people inside. And we develop the lists and we will get your postcards to people. So it's a great way to deliver messages of hope and solidarity from the comfort of your home.
Beautiful. Thanks, Julie. So Geraldine, I muted you because there was some background noise. I'm going to ask someone, and actually I'll invite everyone on this call, if you're not already on Uncommon Law's email list, to go ahead there right now, to uncommonlaw.org. Is there anybody who's on the call who's willing to do that with us live? So we can sort of hear somebody doing it and other folks can follow along. Is anybody not on the Uncommon Law email list and willing to go ahead and sign up? Oh, I see a hand being raised by Lynn. Okay. Lynn, are you able to go ahead to uncommonlaw.org? I'm having a little hard time hearing you. Say that again for me.
My computer, if I go off the Zoom program, I can.
It won't work out. Okay, let me see if I can get another volunteer who might be able to pull up that screen while on the call. Thank you. Yelena, was that
on the screen? I found it up.
You got it, Geraldine?
Yes.
Okay. Either way or both.
We can do it jointly, Geraldine.
Okay. So I'll bring your attention to the Get Involved tab, a few tabs over to the right. And if you click on Get Involved, see a drop-down menu, and there's one that says join our email list. You seeing that? See a thumbs up, and you can go to that link and enter your email and your name and whether you want to receive HTML or text. And I'll encourage everybody to just take this 30 seconds right now and go ahead and do it while we're thinking about it. get on this email list, and then you're going to get announcements for upcoming activities and events. And once you're done doing this, go ahead and do it while I'm talking. But when you're done signing up, I would encourage you to also take a look at the Join Our Team link, just to see the invitation for employment, volunteer activities, involvement. I found it inspirational, and you may know someone who would be a good candidate to connect with Uncommon Law for future employment and other cooperation. Are you getting that done, Yelena and Geraldine? You all signed up? Thumbs up?
All done, Dan.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Okay. I was on it earlier to check it out.
Okay. That's simple. And of course, I encourage folks to check out the rest of the site at your leisure. I found it very inspiring. Is there anything that isn't mentioned there that I didn't mention about these May activities, campaign activities, that any of you want to share with us, JC or Julie or Ritika? Did I kind of cover it, or did I get it all wrong? Close enough?
I think you got it. Yeah, this is great. There's a sweet video that just got uploaded to the website that kind of details what we're up to and why. And folks can watch that and send it around.
Okay, terrific. Pretty straightforward. Where are we at? 9:46. We are past time. So, Geraldine, I'm going to ask you to see if you can get your policy question answered offline. I'm sure it'd be pretty easy to find these guys via email for that, unless we happen to find more time at the very end. We'll see. JC, Julie, and Ritika, as I mentioned, you're welcome to stick with us for the rest of the call or as much as you would like. But I also understand folks have busy schedules. You might be ready to get your dinner or feed your dog or cat or whatever you need to do with the rest of your night. So again, you're welcome to stick with us. But if you need to leave, we understand. And again, a very, very hearty thank you for sharing time with us, and look forward to future opportunities to cooperate.
Thanks, everyone. I'll stay on, but say thank you and good night.
Bye. Hello. Thank you so much.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so next we're going to transition over to Nancy Merritt, who is going to give us a Department of Peacebuilding campaign update, and then we're going to segue from that into the second action, which has to do with our Mother's Day Pie campaign and the summer of activism for Department of Peacebuilding. There she is, Nancy. Unmute you. Nancy is also on our leadership council and for the committee of the Department of Peacebuilding campaign. Welcome, Nancy.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank our guests from Uncommon Law. I think it's pretty appropriate that you are combining the legal field and the therapeutic field. I worked in the legal field for many years, and attorneys often refer to themselves as counselors. So I don't think that's any coincidence there. We talked a bit about, some of our guests talk about reimagining our world. And my guess is that most of us have been spending a lot of our COVID time doing that, just looking at what the lessons for this pandemic are and what we want our world to look like, and that many of us don't want to return to the old normal that wasn't working out real well, especially the greed and consumption and self-frenzy part of it. So what kind of systemic changes do we imagine? For me and a lot of us, part of the paradigm shift includes establishing a Department of Peacebuilding in our federal government. And many of us have been working on that since at least 2004. We need a plan and a structure. We need ongoing peacebuilding guided by compassion and nonviolence and science, rule of law, equality, respect for all that is sacred. As the Earth Charter says, we need to be in right relations to one another and to the greater community of life and future generations. Department of Peace building does provide a structure with reaching into many facets of our society for peace building and applying that to many parts of our society in a compassionate way. It calls for grants for peace building for many things that we really need. Barack Obama last week said that even before the pandemic turned the world upside down, it was already clear that we need real structural changes in our society. And he named a lot of things that we need to do, but he included in those just all the obvious ones, the healthcare, the education, honest leadership, honest government, elections, saying elections matter. And we're saying that peace building also matters. So for this time of year, we have traditionally honored Mother's Day, the Mother's Day Call for Peace by Julia Ward Howe, by ourselves calling for peace. And traditionally we have taken pies to the offices of our congressional representatives. And those pies represent the idea that peace wants a piece of the federal budget pie. And then asking our legislators to co-sponsor this existing legislation. This year we're doing it virtually. We're asking your help to keep the Department of Peace legislation alive in your heart and your actions. And we have, I think Dan sent out an action sheet, right?
Yep.
So we want to have a little bit of fun with it. I guess you should pull up the action sheet and we'll go through the actions. I'll talk about maybe the first and third ones, and Dan will talk about the second one. But one of them is we're asking all of you to pick your favorite kind of pie, just for fun, and to think about the fact that budgeting for peace building when you do that. And a couple of ways we could do this. Well, I would love you to email me and tell me what your favorite pie flavor is, mm-hmm. and your name and state, and then why peace building is important to you. And I don't see a chat room button on our thing, but maybe toward the end of the call or someplace along there in here, people could just shout out your favorite kind of pie. And maybe we can do that after we take some of the other actions. So that's an easy, fun one. And then the hardest one is we have a link to make phone calls to members of Congress, and we have a list of 20 members. And we have information on how to do that, what to say, that kind of thing. And the numbers, contact numbers for those people. And we're asking people to take these actions starting now and continuing through the summer. Maybe I'll turn it over to Dan to talk about contacting your member of Congress, and then I'll just wrap it up with a couple of things after that.
Okay, sounds good, Nancy, thank you. The third action that Nancy just mentioned, just adding on to that, is those 20 members of Congress are ones that have been strategically selected because they're either formerly co-sponsors of this bill or they've been targeted as likely allies, folks likely to sign on. So we're trying to target them with a lot of connection. I'll ask folks to look at that second action sheet. Again, you would have received an email from me about an hour before this call. And the second action sheet, there's a link, it's called 5520, pick your pie, and these actions are on the second page. So I'm gonna ask a volunteer to go ahead and take this second action. It's so quick and easy, and you will be a voice for peace building, for proactive, practical tools to transform conflict, reduce violence, enhance cooperation in the world. Is anybody willing to go ahead and open that PDF and click that link and send messages? I see Geraldine's hand is up, but I'm not sure if it's still up from before.
Geraldine, no, it's the question about legislation that's coming up that I need to ask one of the people from Uncommon Law to be connected with Leah, which I think already left the session. And we didn't have a chat box, so I wasn't able to communicate.
I'll get you an email address for these.
All right.
Thanks. Anybody willing to go ahead and take this action? Click a couple of buttons, put in some information, let your member of Congress know that you would like to see a Department of Peace building in this session. I bet a lot of people on the call have already taken this action. They're already signed up.
It's super easy, you guys.
It is super easy. Yeah. Anybody feel like doing political stuff right now?
You go, Dan.
I already did it. I can't click that link again. Well, if you're not going to do it today, my request is put it on your calendar. If you have a calendar, make a note to yourself to revisit this PDF, click that link, and get there. Because
I hadn't done it, but that doesn't really work.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Judy. Yeah, everybody, just imagine it together. There's just a couple of minutes left anyway, so I'll turn this back over to Nancy, and we'll try to have, we're not going to have time for field chairs. I apologize for my time mismanagement. Nancy, what do you have to wrap us up?
So I know you were all wondering, I've investigated thoroughly and found out that Barbara Lee's favorite pie is cherry, and she also loves key lime pie. And I know you want to know that Hank Johnson from Georgia, the congressman's favorite pie, is also cherry. So if you can find out your congress member's favorite pie, that would be really fun. And then I just wanted to thank you all for keeping the Department of Peace Building legislation alive in your heart and your actions, and to share a quote that Kendra sent me. She's also on our committee, and it's from Tom Hartman talking about his teacher, and he said, why have I always told you that the greatest tools for good, the most powerful way to change the world is to secretly commit little acts of compassion. It does not matter that people know what you are doing, but rather that you do it. You must behave as if your every act, even the smallest, impacts 1,000 people for 100 generations. Because it does.
Beautiful. Thank you, Nancy. Let's see if we can get Geraldine's question in here in a minute or so. Geraldine, do you still have the spirit to give us your question?
In checking out their website, I noticed that SB 1064 by Skinner is coming up for a hearing in the Senate Public Safety Committee on the 20th of this month. So that's why it's kind of urgent. And I was wondering, I guess Leah is in charge of public policy and just how we can help. I know that they, because I was on one of the hearings Monday, and you can by telephone now actually voice support. So I was just wondering, I wanted to contact with Leah to see how we can help her, you know, to support getting this through the committee and on to the next step, which will probably be the Judiciary Committee. So that's what I wanted to ask, was how we can help on SB 1064.
All right. I don't know if any of these folks is in that area or can make the connection.
I can ask Leah to send out an action sheet to this group, or to you, Dan, to share with this group. I don't want to step into that.
So you can reach me at geraldine@peacealliance.org.
Great.
And send all of that information. If you have a template letter, that would be great that we could get in. Hopefully I don't know if we've got enough time to get it officially listed or not, but if you could do that tomorrow, that would be great.
I'll connect you and Leah by email right now.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Geralyn, and thanks, Julie. So we are at the top of the hour. I'm going to unmute everybody and ask you to shout out your favorite kind of pie and have a wonderful evening. And anything else that you want to say? Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And anybody is welcome to go on our website and give us some financial support. Feel free. We welcome contributions, individual or recurring. And I really wish you all very well. Good night, and I love apple pie.
Oh, night,
Sherry.
Good night,
good night, everybody.
Lullaberry,
Lullaberry.
Au revoir.
And still pie.
Good night, peach pie.
Peach, okay.
Thank you so much.
Of course, key lime.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Good night.
Good night.